Hello, you're listening to Sean from Galactic Chat, and today I'm interviewing the best-selling and award-winning Aussie author, Kate Forsyth. Welcome to the podcast, Kate.
Thank you, Sean. I'm so happy to be here.
Now, you've just released Bitter Greens, a novel for adult readers that blends history with folk or fairy tale. It feels like an unearthing of a tale rather than a retelling. What prompted you to tackle the retelling of Rapunzel in this way?
Well, I've always been intrigued by the Rapunzel fairy tale ever since I was a very little girl. I was actually given a copy of the Grimm's fairy tales when I was in hospital with a chronic eye infection that meant that I was half blind, racked with fever, and I was unable to control the weeping of my eye. And so, you know, the whole motif of the healing tears and the girl in the tower, it really spoke to me, and I've always felt a great kind of resonance with the fairy tale. But one of the big problems about retelling a fairy tale is that everyone knows the story. How can you write a story that's compulsively readable if everyone knows what's going to happen in the end? And so the technical challenge for me was to find a way to tell the story as if it seemed new, unheard of before.
Well, I'd say in that respect, you, for myself personally, you definitely succeeded in that. I found that even though I knew, you know, roughly what was going to happen with that part of the tale, I was, you know, sort of half reading in terror what was going to happen next, what the witch was going to do, because she does get quite nasty.
Thank you, Sean. I think that's the greatest compliment you can give any writer, is that you were reading in terror of what was going to happen next. Thank you.
That's all right. I had the pleasure of reading it. So.
It was a wonderful book to write. It took me a very, very long time. My publishers had to be very patient with me because the research was so intensive. It took really, you know, almost 7 years to write the book with all the research and the planning and then actually doing the writing. It's a big book.
Yeah, and I think that comes through in the text, definitely. I was reading through, just sort of going over the themes and what I wanted to ask you in the questions, and I thought, you know, quite aside from the story of Charlotte Rose and then the Rapunzel tale, there's a sort of a layering of history there. Sort of I've done a bit of history at university, but even just the bit about the Huguenots and the religious strife of the time, that was, I suppose you brought it to life for me.
I'm so glad, because that was actually the biggest challenge of all for me. I was brought up without religion. I was brought up in a basically an atheist family. And so, you know, trying to understand why people were willing to go to the stake and burn over, you know, whether or not they believed in transubstantiation, I just found that really hard to come to terms with. And I had to really make a great effort to imagine myself into the mid-17th century mindset where, you know, religion, they really truly did believe that if they chose wrongly, they were going to burn horribly in hell. And that, I think, was the biggest challenge of all in the book, was understanding how important religion was in the lives of the past.
Yeah, I think possibly even myself, I'm an ex-Catholic, and I look back at that, you know, the history that you've retold, and I'm thinking, my goodness, we never quite learnt about this. You know, you learn about the Balkan states and later on in history, but it's virtually the same thing.
Yes, we generally tend to think of France as being very religiously stable, don't we? We don't realise that their history is actually rent with religious strife, that there were, you know, dreadful massacres and dreadful murders, dreadful, you know, religious intolerance. And that was a big journey of discovery for me, is finding out that part of the book. And then being able to try and understand how Charlotte Rose would have felt being a Huguenot at a time when it was illegal to be so.
Yeah, and I think probably modern sensibilities, you would think, oh, you know, it's really not that hard to just flip-flop and change your mind and become a Catholic. That's, you know, same God, what have you. But no, it was really quite a thing to have to do.
I just enjoyed every part of the research of this book. I mean, I didn't know, for example, the whole thing about the witch hunts in France in the 17th century either, and the whole, you know, affair of the poisons and what far-reaching consequences that had in you know, 17th century French life either. It was fascinating studying all of that.
And well, I can tell you now that definitely came through for me when I was reading that fascination. I'm sure there'd be other readers out there that would be very appreciative of the work you've put into it.
But it's still a work of imagination. I mean, it was a challenge. I mean, Charlotte Rose de la Force is a real life woman. She really did live, and she wrote, and you know, she wrote histories and fairy tales, and she wrote, you know, letters and stories. And so to take the life of someone who really lived and then weave a fantastical tale around it, it really had its challenges.
Yeah, so I suppose, well, I won't ask you which parts are real and which parts are invented, but it was every part of that story I felt had something for me, and the different sort of interests that I hold. Moving sort of slightly towards the fairy tale end of things, as I was reading, I thought, this in some ways reminds me of Margot Lanigan's Tender Morsels, in that we have retellings of fairy tales that are quite adult in their tone and content. And I was going to ask you, is that more in keeping with the original versions?
Yes, absolutely. The original version of Rapunzel, which was Percinette, was written by Charlotte Rose de la Force, and it was written for an adult audience. It was written for the Parisian salons, where all the ladies and gentlemen would get together and drink champagne and outdo each other in telling a witty and risque story. The original story was quite sexy. You know, Percinette and the prince, you know, fall in love, make love, and Percinette falls pregnant, and then she subsequently is cast out of the tower and bears twins in the wilderness. Now, of course, the Grimm brothers, when they retold Charlotte Rose's story, they were uncomfortable with premarital sex, and they took all references out. In the original version, Charlotte Rose describes the prince feasting upon the parsley of love. Percinette means parsley. So in the original French, it's really quite a risque story.
Okay, that might attract a few more readers then.
Oh, I hope so.
Now, you're working on a PhD at the moment.
I am.
That has a focus on fairy tales and folk tales?
Yes. My primary focus is actually on fairy tale retellings, in particular on Rapunzel and the retelling of Rapunzel. It's quite a fascinating story. It's been retold so many times. What I find fascinating about it is how each time it's been retold, it's been changed, you know, either for religious or for political reasons. And I find in modern day retellings, you know, Tangled, for example, the Disney version, I think that the writers of Tangled have adroitly sidestepped the primary problems in the story. I find it fascinating that hair care companies use Rapunzel in their advertising. I find it fascinating that so many different young adult writers have retold the tale. And so I'm just working on that as my major thesis.
Okay, well, that sounds interesting. How long do you have to go on that?
I'm about halfway through. So Arbita Greens was actually the creative component of my doctorate, and that's obviously written and published now. So now I just need to write my exegesis, which is a fancy word for a long dissertation.
Okay, well, good luck with that. I've heard from a couple of other people that have been doing PhDs that it's a long, long process.
It is, but then so is writing a novel. Writing a novel, in actual fact, is, I think, more difficult because you are disguising your intent. You're telling through symbol and metaphor and through incident. While in an exegesis, you just say straight out what you think and what supports your theories. So I actually find I love the creative process, but I'm not at all worried about the exegesis, because I think, well, if I've managed to write this many novels, I think I can manage to write a 30,000-word dissertation.
Yeah, not to say that that's easy, though.
No, not of course.
No. Bitter Greens is more than just a retelling of Rapunzel. It also unearths the historical personage of Charlotte Rose de la Force.
Yes.
Who, as you've stated, was the author of the original Rapunzel tale. How did you find Charlotte Rose in the first place, and what intrigued you about her?
I simply stumbled upon her. I was researching Rapunzel. I was trying to find the origins of the tale. I was trying to find out who first told the tale, and that led me back to the earliest versions of The Maiden in the Tower, and that was when I found out that the story as we know it was first told by this 17th century French writer. So I was intrigued a little to know that she was a woman writing in the 17th century, a period that I found fascinating. So I dug a little bit deeper, and then I found out that she was this fascinating and scandalous woman who had been related to the Sun King, Louis XIV. She was actually his second cousin. She lived at court. She was a maid of honour to the Queen. She was very active in the Parisian salons. And yet at the age of 46, which is the age I am now, the king packed her up and sent her off to a nunnery. As we discussed before, she was a Protestant, a Huguenot, and so she was forcibly locked away in a convent quite against her will. And it was while she was locked away that she wrote Percinet. And the immediate parallels intrigued me. The woman locked away in the convent writing about a girl locked away in a tower. And so then I dug a little bit deeper, and then I found out a little bit about her life, and I found out that one of the things that had so scandalised the court about her behaviour was that when she was in her early 30s, she fell in love with a much younger man, Charles Brion, who was 24. And they wanted to get married, but his family locked him away in their castle. And to gain access to her lover, Charlotte Rose hired a travelling troupe of actors and acrobats, and then she dressed herself up as a dancing bear to gain access to him. And I thought, oh, what boldness, what wit, what humour, what, you know, audacity. I thought, what an amazing woman. I just was completely fascinated by her, and then everything I found out about her just made me more and more. I actually became quite obsessed with her.
Well, I thought that the scene where she takes the troop to rescue her husband to be, I thought that you know truth is stranger than fiction. I thought that was almost too sort of Hollywood rescue modern to be real,
but it's
true.
I know, and many other things that you think that she did. For example, using black magic to try and ensnare a husband. You probably thought, oh, Kate, what a fantastical imagination you have. But this is what Charlotte Rose did. Most, you know, I have not changed any facts of her true life story. I've just used them. She was a gift to a novelist. I was so afraid someone else was going to discover her and write about her before I could get my novel out, because she was just the most extraordinary woman.
Well, on that note, you rescued Charlotte Rose from obscurity. Were there other women writers of that period that you discovered? Can you talk about them?
Oh, yes, look, absolutely. That was one of the great discoveries for me, is that to realise that many of the fairy tales that we know best were actually written by women in the mid-17th century. Beauty and the Beast, for example, is one of them. And these women just had the most fascinating lives. You know, they were trying to rebel against the strictures of a very, very patriarchal and strict society. Most of them suffered as a result of the rebellion, like Charlotte Rose, who was locked away. I actually think there's a wealth of amazing stories just waiting for me to discover and write about in this period of history.
What do you think it is that obscures them in our history books? Is it something about the time, or is it something that sort of follows women writers down to modern day?
Look, I think we can certainly admit that it's always been difficult for a female artist in history, that they have had to deal with much greater challenges and obstacles than their male counterparts. I bless the day that I was born in the 20th century and not in the 17th or the 16th or the 15th centuries. But it is still difficult for women now trying to balance. I have three children of my own. I have a family to love and care for, and, you know, keeping the balance between being a creative artist and being a loving wife and mother is difficult at times. I'm not going to deny it. But then I think about Charlotte Rose. I think in my dedication, I dedicate Bitter Greens to all my friends who are both women and writers, because we are living the life that Charlotte Rose and her peers longed for and fought for and failed to get. And so, yes, I guess the short answer is yes, I do believe that I'm drawn to these stories about women who are also, you know, creative artists and who are struggling to kind of carve a place for themselves in the world.
And from a reader's point of view and from a male point of view, I find it utterly fascinating and refreshing that we're starting to see these sort of stories coming through, written about women who were writing, but different takes on things. And from that point of view, from my point of view as a male reader, I find it refreshing.
I'm so glad to hear that. Thank you, Sean.
Well, that's all right. Like I said, it was a beautiful book to read. Following on in the same vein, I was thinking about the character of Rapunzel as presented by Charlotte Rose, and she's certainly more resilient, more an active protagonist. What do you think has happened to make her sort of the passive princess on an oversized pedestal in our more sanitized versions?
It is interesting. In Charlotte Rose's version, she was far more of an active agent. She was taken from her parents when she was 7. She was locked away by the witch when she was 12. She was isolated. I mean, if you think about that in terms of real life, true history, you can just imagine the terror and despair of a 12-year-old girl being locked away, isolated, left alone in solitary imprisonment for years and years and years and years. It's just, it's horrifying. And it does happen in true life, as we sadly know too well. So one of the things that I really wanted to do was write this book as if it had really happened, as if it was living history and as if it was true, because that would immediately give it that charge of terror and despair that I thought was going to make the book so much more powerful. And then what I wanted to do is I wanted to have my Rapunzel figure, Margarita, I wanted her to actually try and escape, to try and trick the witch, to learn from the witch, to learn, you know, to gain power from the witch, and then, of course, to be active in her own escape. I was very true to the story that Charlotte Rose wrote. I didn't change anything except that I added a detail from an earlier story. There was an earlier Maiden in the Tower story written by an Italian writer, Giambattista Basile, and he had his heroine, Petrosinella, escaping from the tower and casting back 3 magical obstacles behind her, which entrapped and ensnared and then devoured the witch. Now, in Charlotte Rose's version, her Rapunzel actually is an agent of redemption and salvation. She rescues the witch. She releases the witch from her own evil. And so that seemed to me a more important ending, but I did include the motif of the 3 magical obstacles as well.
Okay. Now, obviously, you've done a bit more than just look into Rapunzel, the fairy tale Rapunzel. What do you think we may have lost in other fairy tales that have come down in the more sanitized versions?
In general, there has been a gradual leaching of the sexual charge and a gradual leaching of the darkness out of fairy tales, as have been retold into modern times. So now when you buy a collection of fairy tales for little girls, it's all very sweet and pretty and flowery. But I believe that the darkness, the cruelty, the terror in fairy tales is actually what makes them necessary. Bruno Bietelheim, who is a famous fairy tale scholar, he said that the terror in fairy tales was necessary in order to allow the child reader to experience that terror, but then learn that in being strong and valiant and kind, you can overcome the obstacles that life throw at you, and you can, you know, reach, you know, some kind of triumph. And without the terror, without the darkness, without the obstacles, there's actually no psychological growth in reading the stories.
Well, on that note, for lovers of fairy tales and even beyond that, fantasy, what original works or versions of fairy tales would you be able to recommend off the top of your head?
Oh, look, you know, I'm working at the moment on the Grimm brothers and the stories of Dorchen Wild, who was the unknown, forgotten girl who told the Grimm brothers many of their stories, many of their most compelling stories. So, look, my favourite fairy tales are obviously Rapunzel, but I would read Bittergreen to get the true version. Swans, which I just adore. Beauty and the Beast. Let me see, Hansel and Gretel, I think is a very powerful one. There's All Kinds of Fur, which is an incest tale. It's been dropped out of the canon because it's too dark, but there are some wonderful retellings of All Kinds of Fur. Rumpelstiltskin is always an interesting one, and I would go back to the original version, which is much darker. I think that just about covers. I love The Snow Queen, which is a Hans Christian Andersen story. In general, I'm not a big fan of Hans Christian Andersen because he's so melancholy and, you know, filled with despair, but I think The Snow Queen is his best.
Well, that should give some of the listeners plenty to go on with. Bittergreen's had quite a few moments where the writing got to me emotionally. There's some harrowing scenes with the actual Rapunzel story, but perhaps the worst I felt was when Charlotte Rose is locked up and there's that threat of her manuscripts being burned and then her being prevented from writing. I thought, no, I was sort of screaming in my head, no, you can't do that.
No.
But were there moments where you surprised yourself with the cruelty towards your own characters? You know, not so much killing of your darlings, but you put them under...
Sometimes when you are writing, you don't feel as if it is you who are writing. It's as if the story always existed and it is your job to bring it to life. And so there were certain scenes which I have great difficulty in writing, which I actually avoided and put off and worked around because I didn't want to write them. And then when I did come to write them, I found myself so emotionally affected that I was finding it hard to breathe, and I would need to get up and go outside into the garden and breathe deeply for a few moments before I came back and wrote those scenes again. And I have had this experience before, because you do become so emotionally involved with what you're writing that it's impossible for you not to feel things. But it was particularly terrible writing the central section of the book, which is a witch's story. There were scenes in there that I found very confronting and hard to write, but I thought were entirely necessary in order to give the book, in order to make the book make sense on a psychological level. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure I know the scene you're talking about. We'll leave readers to discover that on their own, but I felt... You know, going into this story as a reader, I'm sort of not having any background on how you might be approaching it. I felt, yes, it came across to me as something that was quite real, bedded down in history, and as you say, the psychological effects of imprisonment and other things that occurred. I think that worked very well, and I was pleasantly surprised and terrified at the same time.
That is good news, and hopefully all my other readers will be pleasantly surprised and terrified as well. I actually love the word, your use of the word surprise, because I think surprise is actually one of the biggest, the most important thing in a story is once the reader thinks, oh yes, I know exactly what's going to happen, well then you can't keep them reading. Well, if you make them feel surprised, if you set up expectations and then, completely, reverse them or subvert them, well, then, I feel that the reader will then keep on reading with a heightened sense of terror or dread or suspense. And that is, of course, what makes a book compulsively readable. And so all the way through the book, I was searching for ways to continually surprise the reader with things that they thought were going to happen and then didn't happen, or which they were afraid were going to happen and then did happen.
No, well, I'd say again, you definitely succeeded with me on that. You'd switch from story, the two or three stories that were going within the book at just the right moment, and I'm thinking, oh no, I want to get back to find out what's happened, and then by the time you're at the end of the next story, you're thinking, oh, hang on, there's this other, yeah. So it was structurally, I thought it worked pretty much perfectly. So I don't think you'll have anything anything to worry about. Well, this is the last question, and it's totally divorced from the book. You've been writing fiction for some time now. You've got about 26 novels under your belt now.
Yes, I do.
And I was just wondering, what significant changes have you observed in the field of fiction writing over, say, the last decade?
That's an interesting question. I mean, certainly there have been changes. You know, genres have become hot and then have grown cold, and other genres have become hot again, and certain styles have changed. I have seen a movement to prose becoming sparer and sparer, which I'm not actually happy with, because I personally love a very, you know, vivid and supple and lyrical prose. But I think the primary difference is that I have changed. When I had my first novel published, I was turning 30, and I've been a full-time internationally published author ever since. I certainly think the last couple of years have been tough as far as, you know, maintaining sales and winning new markets and keeping people buying books. But, you know, in general, I just feel very grateful that I am able to keep on writing the kind of stories that I want to write, and people keep wanting to read them.
I'm wondering when the next fairy tale retelling might be out.
Well, I'm working on one now, which I'm now as completely fascinated with it as I was with Charlotte Rose and Rapunzel. So I'm now working on the story of Gretchen Wild, who met the Grimm brothers when she was 12. She told them about a third of all the stories in their first collection of fairy tales. She told them Hansel and Gretel, she told them in the Rumpelstiltskin, she told them Six Swans, she told them a Beauty and the Beast variant, a Bluebeard variant, and in time, she and William Grimm were married. So it's a beautiful love story, but because it's set in a time of war and tyranny and great poverty in Germany, it's also a story with a lot of darkness in it.
Oh, okay. So will we wait 7 more years for that one?
I hope not. I'm about halfway through it now, so I'm working away steadily while I do my doctorate and raise my children and do everything else I have to do.
I'm sure, however long it takes, it's going to be an interesting tale, as you say. And on that note, I'd like to thank you for your time and company. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you.
Oh, thank you, Sean. I've enjoyed it too, and I'm so glad that you enjoyed the book.